Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I don't know how positive this one's going to be. Probably a little bit if we talk a little Orioles with this guy. All of our WNST Baltimore Positive Maryland Crab Cake Tour chats brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill, as well as our newest sponsor, Window Nation. They're doing buy two, get two free. That's Window Nation all month long here in June. I'll be telling you more about that. We call this one the Recon, and you know, I'm still tallying off from last week and Uvalde, Don. And I don't want people thinking we're going off the deep end on this guns thing. We're waking up every morning and there are slaughters of people happening in addition to what's happening in our own town, right? But and we own this city and in front of it's just sugar the other day in front of my home. But guns, and more guns. Here we are, Don. Here we go again, right?
I mean, Nestor, just think of the past few days, right? We wake up following Memorial Day weekend, and we see that in Chicago over the weekend, over Memorial Day, 71 people were shot, 9 were killed. I wake up this morning.
You wonder how many people were shot at were missed.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sadly true. You wake up to a mass shooting in Tulsa the other day. I wake up this morning, 8 shot in New Orleans. I guess what I'm always, as you know, I'm pretty pessimistic. For an optimistic guy, I'm pretty pessimistic that anything meaningful will happen given the tribal nature of our politics in the United States. And it just, you know, I had the family over last night and we were all talking. And the thing is, I don't think reasonable people can say that any other crisis like this that was taking lives on a daily basis would we turn a blind eye to, right?
I mean, we are numb as a society. We're numb,
right,
and dumb. I mean, you see what Canada's done. You see what Australia's done. You see what the UK's done. It's really unbelievable when you go and live in these countries. Your children go to school in the morning and you don't think that your school might be the one that gets shot up today because there's one getting shot up every day.
Well, I think folks all across the country are coming to that realization again.
Well, 400 million guns. I've always said this, Don. You know, one of the worst parts of owning a gun is the fact that you might use it and that you're inclined to use it when there are 400 million guns. And we have free use of drugs, alcohol. We have mental health issues here. We have conflict management and conflict issues in all sorts of ways across all socioeconomic backgrounds. You know, whether it's inner city, whether it's out in the middle of Nebraska, husbands beating wives, people trapped, disagreements. How are we going to solve it? Boom. That's how we're going to solve it.
Well,
and that is something that 200 years ago and before in our world, we never really thought it. You had to stab somebody, right? You had to hit them with a rock. You had to poison them, right? There are ways to kill people, but not the way a weapon that is designed for mass destruction, literally.
Well, no, certainly not for a weapon of mass destruction, a weapon of war, a weapon so ferocious, Nestor, that police officers stood around for an hour because they were
fearing for their lives. Right.
They were outgunned and thought they would
an 18-year-old kid who walked into the store, saved his lunch money, apparently, and he outmanned
a lot
the
of
entire
money,
police
man.
Department of a small town.
Yeah. 3,500 hours, a lot of lunch money. So I think there's some questions where a young 18-year-old has $3,500 in cash to buy, as you said, 2 assault rifles, 400 rounds of ammunition. But it's interesting as you watch most in the Republican Party, who, again, this one's a little bit interesting because I usually, as you know, we've been doing this now well over 4 years, I normally point to just the nature of politics for answers to a lot of what our elected officials
do. Answers to politics is money, Don, right? Well, I mean, come on now. You told me that day one, right? If there were no money coming to these people, they'd be a whole lot more right-minded. Correct-minded, excuse me, they're plenty right-minded. They'd be more correct-minded if the NRA wasn't giving them $3 million in Texas's case, right?
That may be part of it. I think what's happening, Nestor, might even be a bit more complicated than that in this sense. I think it does get back. I don't like to link everything. I get tired of January 6th, right? But give me a second to try to put these things together. So on the night of January the 6th and January the 7th, and maybe even January the 8th, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, they all stood up and basically said, this is outrageous. This is awful. The president is to blame. I mean, I thought we were witnessing in real time the final rejection of the celebrity president, of the ex-celebrity president. But what happened?
I call him a con man. That's just
as I pointed
really,
out.
At heart, he's a con man. I mean, that's
right, or the con man.
Con man.
So yes. What happened was they began to get polling numbers that showed them that a significant number of Republicans across the nation were already buying into the big lie, were already taking names about who was going to stand with, as you call him, the con man, and who was not. And McCarthy and others said, whoa, 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 wait a minute, folks. We're on the wrong side of this. So all of a sudden, McCarthy jumps in his little plane and they fly down to Mar-a-Lago and they pay homage and they say the appropriate prayers. And they
apologize that the coup didn't work.
And they never they never looked back. So I think, yes, was the money at one time from the NRA certainly key to it? Yes. Now, the NRA has been hurt financially. They're not the behemoth that they once were. They still make significant contributions, but nothing like they did. I think what is more at play, and I'm actually, a friend of mine recommended a book to me. It's by Ezra Klein called Why We Are Polarized. And I'm reading that now, trying to get a history of this polarization. I'll be reporting back to you and the listeners on it. Very easy.
I follow reading. Ezra Klein. He's a great writer.
Very smart guy, well-researched book. And another guy that I follow weekly that you've heard me talk about is the political science professor at the University of Virginia, Larry Sabato, does a regular newsletter. And today he talks about that tribalism and partisanship in terms of the Senate races that are going to take place this fall. Now, all of this rambling on gets back to the gun issue. Because I believe what has happened is we've become so tribalized that if either side likes an issue or supports an issue, the other side immediately has a knee-jerk negative reaction about that issue. And it is certainly true. I don't think it's truer anywhere than in the way people react to the gun issue. Listen, I spoke to an avid gun owner yesterday, had a lengthy discussion with an avid gun owner. He is frustrated.
What is an avid gun owner? Does that mean they buy one every month like I buy belt buckles? Or
no.
Like, seriously, what's an avid? It's somebody who's taking their gun to hunt ducks, bear, deer, wherever, twice a year in the winter to feel like a man, right? Like the grass woods or something.
And likes target shooting. So, and will never do anything untoward with those guns. But here's the point.
The problem is a rational person like that doesn't see how an 18-year-old boy would see video games and violence and how much fun it could be to shoot a place up. because life didn't go so well and the girls don't like you.
Yeah, but
and you didn't get good grades.
My point being that this person, and I think there are millions of him out there, supports every single thing that's being talked about.
I'm not trying to take his gun.
Yeah,
he better not be shooting deer on my property, but fair enough. But
that's my point.
You know, like, go for it. I don't have any problem with people hunting. I don't need to see the dead deer splayed out or you holding dead ducks in your hands, you know, on my Facebook. But God bless you. If you're out shooting things in the woods.
Sure.
And you have a gun. I mean, I'm not naive. I mean, my family had guns, like all of that. My, you know, all my relatives. I'm from Dundalk, man. Everybody hunted, like all of that. It's not my gig ever. Right. It won't be, but that's fine. I mean, I don't want to take it away from you.
But the point that I'm trying to make is, here's someone 40-ish, really the profile, right? The 40-year-old male, the gun owner, who can't understand why we don't have universal background checks, who is open to looking at age limits, probably less open to the kind of assault weapon ban that you and I think makes perfect sense. You know, but
it's amazing in this world. We have a driver's license, right? Age of consent, drinking age, driving, like all of these things. And this feels so incredibly out of whack that anybody with a brain would think we cannot militia style arm everyone who wants to be militia styled arm in our culture, that would really be a bad thing.
Yeah. Because
that would be a bad thing for a gang in the inner city to have a bunch of these assault weapons and to stake a place out and fight with the police, you know, Waco style. That's going to happen at some point. Obviously, it's going to happen. And the cops are going to be outmanned, and they are every day. We've now aided criminals by outmanning our police, and we want to defund the police and like all of this stuff. The thought about protection and the thought about safety and the thought of what freedom is, right? What freedom is and life is and the value of life. That's the part that gets pissed away in all this lobbying from the NRA.
Yeah.
It really
I think, yeah. And I think it is. I mean, listen.
And then we bring bags of dead children out every single day.
Regardless of what we think, and we know what we think of the Ted Cruz's and the Josh Hawley's and others like them. But let's take Cruz.
You see them as morally bankrupt. I don't know what else to say. Just really morally bankrupt humans. And that is an appealing – it's appealing to the voters somehow.
Yeah, but my point is this, is that they're extremely bright guys, right? They're Ivy League educated attorneys. Ted Cruz has argued – before the Supreme Court, Hawley was a clerk. These are really, really bright guys. You'll never convince me that in a private moment in the confessional, they know these guns have no place on the streets of a civilized society. They know that. They know, because they are constitutional scholars, that originalism didn't ever envision guys walking down the street with weapons of war. They know that. But here's what they also know. Their base is so polarized and so dug in on this issue that if Cruz and or Hawley ever voted for even the most rational of proposals, which is what, you know, where Senator Chris Murphy and Senator John Thune.
Or what about 90% of the country wants?
Yeah, 90% of the country. Hell, Nestor, 65%, including a large percentage of Republicans, want assault weapons banned. It's one of the real strange developments in modern American democracy that an issue could be so overwhelmingly
popular. But Don, it speaks to media. It speaks to people talking to each other, and this thing has gotten twisted into there's going to be a civil war, and you better have the guns. That's what that side believes. I mean,
yeah, I think that's,
if you watch any of these Trump things where they talk to these humans out in the hinterlands who believe that Hillary Clinton ate babies and, you know, all of that stuff, right? That gun thing has been, that dogma has been given to those people to carry that torch for them. And in the mind, our forefathers did not see us all talking to each other on video channels. They believe me.
Yeah. No,
that's the danger. The danger is the last 15 years of this, literally.
It is that reality that makes me very pessimistic that anything will change. And the last thing I'll say, because I want to talk some sports today, but we haven't talked sports in a long time, and I do want to talk about a couple of things. But that's why it's so disingenuous, right? I mean, some of the stuff is so disingenuous, you scratch your head. Like mental health and the debasement of our culture. Well, every other industrial nation, as they point out, has mental health issues and the debasement of its culture. We're a global society. Mental health and cultural debasement don't stop at the borders of the United States. Yet, as you point out every week, we are the only. And there aren't many things, right, that you can say this about that are as this definitive. We are the only nation, the only one that has this kind of gun violence. So we know the issue.
We're the worst in the world at protecting our children and sending them to school in the morning and thinking we can pick them up in the afternoon.
And that was the point.
Worst in the world at that.
Yeah, we got sidetracked. I do want to comment on
more unsafe in any mall in America, and they wand you down at these ball games and concerts and everywhere we're getting wanded down. The people that want to do this aren't going to the places where they're wanding people down, you know, like literally, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what happened out in the square at the country music thing out of Mandalay Bay? I mean, I've stood there. I've been there. I've stayed there. The fact that I could be at the pool and somebody up on the 13th floor could just open fire. That's just, I mean, it makes me never want to go to Texas or places like that. Right. I mean, places where the guns are just freely being sold out of every gift shop, you know, and everybody feels like they need one to be a real American. It's an ideology that, you know, quite frankly, makes a guy my age consider Canada and Australia and other options places I've been where life might be a little more peaceful in my elder statesmen.
I do not think in any way you are alone in that thought. Here's my last.
Because I know you want to talk Lamar.
Well, here's my last. I actually want to talk Adley first, but here's my last tidbit about this. If anyone doesn't think that families in this country have had their way of life truly disrupted by the Sandy Hooks, by the Stoneman Douglases, by the tragedy at Robb Elementary in Uvalde, find some young parents on your block or talk to some of your relatives who have been dropping their children off in the past week to 10 days and talk to them about how their stomach feels when they watch their children walk in. Talk to your neighbor who is a teacher and ask them how they feel when they're having these drills, trying to tell young children what to do in an active shooter incident. If you don't think this is rupturing the fabric of our nation, you just are not paying attention. And with that, Nestor, I'll leave you on, because I can tell you, I have young grandchildren, and I know how their moms and dads feel when they watch them walk into school every day. And it's truly tragic. So we'll come back. Unfortunately, Nestor, we'll be talking about this for way, way, way too long.
Hey, well, I just hope, I mean, right now there's some child that, you know, 6 weeks from now will be dead because of this, of violence. Oh, and that's, well, that, you know, that sickens me. And that sickens me for our city too. You know, people out in Middle River will say, well, what about in your own city? Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. We're talking about everybody.
This is everybody. Everybody says, well, You don't talk about Chicago. Yes, we do.
Well, Brandon Scott's going to be on in a couple of weeks. We're getting together at a place called Next Face Cafe. And this ghost gun thing, I mean, I didn't know the manufacturers were making these guns. I thought that this was like a basement, like I said, mix it up in the, you know, in the basement. I didn't realize that you could manufacture a licenseless, serial numberless gun.
Nestor, and think about it. The governor of Maryland, because he was afraid of the base and the gun lobby, would not sign the ghost gun ban. In other words, the governor of Maryland thinks it is okay to flood the streets of our state with guns that have no serial number and can't be traced. Now, come on, Nestor.
What kind of society are we running? Don Mueller's here. We call this the recon. We're going to slip out of politics, and we're going to move on to religion. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to move on to baseball and football. I need to hear your Lamar thoughts, being the granddad that you are. And I've never taken more abuse on the internet. I mean, I thought the Oriole fans were bad, and they are. But the Raven thing, the Lamar thing, I can't even believe it's polarizing that if you love the team, you think it's okay that the quarterback's not here. Like that's just when 90% of the team's here, it's farcical to me. And whatever his end game is, and I am trying to get into his head, and I've been an employee and I've been an employer. I mean, I can see this on both sides, that if he had an issue or a bitch or a leverage or a this or a that, I'm not smelling what he's cooking here. I don't even know what he's cooking. I don't know that he has a strategy. I don't know that he's getting good advice. Because good advice would say, if you want to win a Super Bowl, go out there and participate with your teammates.
I have a couple of thoughts, and actually they're a bit contradictory. So you have to let me finish before you tell me I'm crazy. My first thought is OTAs are just that. They're optional. Josh Allen isn't there. Brady's not there. Kyler Murray's not there. So a lot of people don't show up.
I don't care about what Johnny does across the alley. I care about
I understand. I told you, let me finish though.
It's not made okay by the fact that Tom Brady's doing that. That's a bad argument.
I said, let me finish before you criticize. So I think they are optional. I think that having said that, I'm a culture and leadership guy. Having run schools for many years, having worked in county government with a team of, you know, 8,500 employees. And
there are probably many events that are optional for you, right?
I believe in culture. Yeah, I believe in culture and leadership. So do I think Lamar would have sent a very strong message about trying to get this thing turned around from what was a pretty dismal season? I think he should have been there. Now, do I think that OTAs are something that were created by the NFL to keep people talking about the NFL? Yeah, I probably am cynical enough to think that. And do I think that if Lamar comes in and looks terrific and the team is, 12-5, will anyone care? No. I think the strangest thing, and I've talked, We both talked to a lot of people out at the castle. The only answer I ever get about Lamar representing himself is basically, if you paraphrase it, he's a different kind of dude, right? And that's good and that's bad. But having your mother represent you in something that's, you know, a several hundred million dollar deal, probably not the best decision. And I think you hear that in Eric's comments and Steve's comments and in John's comments.
Well, what I saw in his comments, Lamar's comments last Friday that I responded to, was really a maturity issue. And you've been smacking me since the minute you met me about all of those things, how grownups act. And sometimes you and I disagree, and that's cool. And even at 53, The notion that he's going to go out and sass Chris Sims in the middle of practice when his teammates are out on the field and telling people, it's none of your business, don't think about me, don't worry about me. Well, you know, I know the building's a little upset with Lamar at this point.
No doubt.
And a little beleaguered in saying, Let's see, dude. No one wanted you. We wanted you. No one loved you. We loved you a lot. We built our entire team around you to help you win a Super Bowl. You're the one that's going to get $300 million. We win the Super Bowl. It's not going to be the center. It's not going to be the left tackle. And they're all out here doing this for you. And so you can win. You're going to be the one who ultimately gets the money if we win. But we need you to do that. And you're a part of this. And I think there's a level of shock from the coaches and from people that he's not there, because it's out of character, out of what they know him to be over 4 years, which is in early, out late, first guy there, Mr. Enthusiasm, all of that. And I've likened this to the fact when you're, and I know you've been married a long time, I've been married a long time, but back when you were dating the girl and you really liked each other and you've gone on some dates, and there's that one day she looks at you and says, things have changed. Things have changed a little bit. And when Lamar's not at practice in May and 85% of the roster's out there and he hasn't met his center yet, and various new teammates, that is something that I don't think the Ravens want to see from a guy that is doing this ostensibly as a negotiating tactic to get more money, right?
Yeah, but it's not. That's what I'm talking about. That's where I think your analysis,
that's short-sighted.
I think your analysis is spot on. And again, I don't mean this. When I say I've never met him, I've shaken his hand. But when I talk about met, to sit down and chat.
I've never chatted with Lamar Jackson other than the guy asking him questions.
Yeah, I don't know Lamar. But do I get a sense that he's a bit immature? I do. Does that worry me about spending several hundred million dollars and making him our quarterback of the future? It does. Now, having said all that, the guy's skill set is like something I've never seen. And my expectation, even though, you know, I've been critical of Greg Roman offenses because I think traditionally they have a ceiling. But do I believe that with a top-notch offensive line, which I believe they could be poised to have, they could revert to 2019 form? I think that's possible. I think that's possible.
And that's possible again, without him coming to OTAs as well. It's very possible.
No doubt. But it's a bad look. But let's talk about a good look. And we've got a few minutes here left. I think that it's really interesting for franchises. And we'll talk about the Orioles for a minute. And, you know, I certainly remember the night that Cal came up and the excitement for that. And that's the only thing I think that I can equate the Rushman piece to, is it looks to me, you know, his 189 batting average aside, which I'm not worried about at all, looks to me like the Orioles hit a home run with a 1-1 a couple of years ago. And as you point out, you better damn sight, you've said a couple of times.
Don, he's hitting 189. Hit a home run today's not to say, right? he's hit a home run. He's hitting 189. At some point, I'm not glossing past that. I mean, I like the kid. They're playing better ball. Yeah, they're winning the game every day or two. But
I'm not worried.
I'm not calling him a savior yet.
Yeah, the answer that I give to that is the Orioles in 1981 called up a kid by the name of Cal Ripken and put him in the lineup every day. And at the end of the season, he hit 181 and did not have one extra base hit. That turned out okay. I think there's an adjustment. I think anybody who
I'm not counting on Rutschman. I'm just saying.
Oh no, no, I know you're not.
Build a statue. He better.
No.
He better play ball better than he has the first 2 weeks. That's all.
He better be great. Listen, anybody knows baseball, and we can all be wrong, but his swing is short and compact and quick to the ball. His plate discipline is incredible. I mean, he's already among league leaders in number of pitches that he sees per at bat. I mean, his plate discipline for a kid is remarkable, and his ability behind the plate is amazing. And I like, going back to what we talked about Lamar, going to culture, his enthusiasm is infectious. I laughed last night. There was a game where he wasn't catching. And Chirinos, I think, is a good backup catcher. But I'll be darned if Chirinos wasn't meeting pitchers as they walked off the mound. I mean, Rushman's enthusiasm, because there doesn't appear to be anything phony about it. Evidently, it's the same that he was in Pony League. So I think there's an excitement. Nestor, something for us to talk about next week, because I know we got a guest, we've got to get out of here. Something you've been talking about, we will come back and talk about this next week, are real attendance issues in baseball. I was shocked the other day when I saw the Orioles. It's not great, but they're 23rd. There are seven other teams who are drawing fewer fans.
Well, the Oakland A's fans have just quit on the franchise. I was
Showing up. Marlins fans aren't showing up. Pittsburgh fans aren't showing up. Baseball has an issue that they have to figure out. We'll talk about that.
Well, I did talk about that at length, by the way, so I want to give a little plug here. I was at Luna Del Sea on Wednesday doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. And I was thinking about who I was going to have down. By the way, Luke Klippinger says hello, sends his best. We had Ivan Bates on, had a great conversation with him. Tony Asadi joined us, as well as my pal Doug Butchke, talking about a Crab Cake Festival down in Laurel in September. But Dave Sims, longtime voice of the Seattle Mariners, one of two African-American broadcasters in the entire sport, longtime friend of mine. He was actually a listener of mine, which I didn't know. He's a Philadelphia guy. He was a listener of mine at the turn of the century when I was in New York. And we were telling some New York stories and Mickey Mantle stories and baseball stories. He was the Channel 2 newsman in New York at the turn of the century and took this gig to be the Mariners broadcaster from New York, from Philadelphia. He's been doing it for two decades now, right? He's been there since. And we told Ichiro stories, and like, it was phenomenal. But at the heart, I said, Dave, you've been coming here a long time. I mean, you've been doing this 30 years. What you saw, I mean, you were at the game Tuesday night. It was your birthday. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
My wife's birthday was Tuesday. You were at the ballpark. There was nobody there.
Beautiful gym.
My intern, Chloe, was there. She got a $4 ticket. She said there might have been 2,000 people there in the seventh inning. Like, it was really.
Oh, in the seventh? Yeah. Our friends Ken and Meg, who you know quite well, that we sit with, we guessed at the beginning of the game. I think the crowd was 8,500 paid tickets. We think there was 4,500 to 5,000.
That's a problem. That's a problem for Baltimore. No, that's a problem for it. Should John Angelo should be out in front? You know, should be out in front of that. The guy that you don't know about, T.J. Brightman. T.J. Brightman. Go to a bright idea, T.J. Brightman, and they're supposed to be marketing this with something. Cow milking, whatever it is. Well,
Nestor, I think they've done – we've
done a lousy job. There were 4,500 people at the
ballpark. No.
That's
but
lousy.
I think they're really trying. I mean, they got the $4 bleacher seats. I think they've done some really clever marketing.
Then people have to come.
People have to come and – you know, what gets lost, we'll leave it with this. We'll get out of here. Over the past 31 or so games, there are 500 ball club. They're a much better ball club. And assuming that Grayson Rodriguez didn't tear his back up in his recent start at Norfolk and it was a cramp or something that's not long-lasting, they're going to be much better than they are even now. But right now, they're a tough out for people. I mean, a team that's contending, I really don't want to see us on the schedule because we're a tough out. We're not a great club yet, but we're certainly fun. And with that, we'll come back and talk next week.
Well, man, I know you'll like that conversation to have with Dave Sims from the Mariners Radio Network and from Root Sports. You can find that out at Baltimore Positive. Don and I are doing the recon. It started with guns, and it ended with Adley Rutschman somewhere in and about. You'll find some things you like out at WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, where we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.